Coming up this week in computer hardware, Intel stumbles, AMD gains, Oculus reveals the Quest, NVIDIA's got ship dates for the RTX 2070 GPUs, and let's talk gaming headsets, but high-quality ones. All that and more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
This is Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 485, recorded on September 27th, 2018. It's good to be AMD. Welcome to Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch weekly show that aims to bring you the most useful, most engageable, most delightful, most, I don't know, sociable. Sociable? I can't even speak words today. Ryan, save me. Ryan Stroud, PCPer.com, the man, the myth, the legend, who, much like myself, is probably wondering, where exactly did the idea for the Echo Alexa enabled microwave come from?
I think it came from all of our hearts, Patrick, for the inevitable future in which every single one of our devices is IoT intelligent connected.
IoT anyway.
Well, yeah. What I need now is an Echo device that will take the burrito out of the freezer and put it in said microwave as well. Just by voice command. So we are missing a crucial step.
A burrito robot.
A burrito bot. Yeah,
a burrito exactly. Bot. If you haven't,
this is Taco Bell marketing for them.
Is there a burrito bot? Am I unaware of a burrito bot?
Not that I know of. No.
Have you? I mean, did you see the kind of the crazy list of stuff? It wasn't particularly crazy, except for the microwave. But when you go to Amazon and the page, and I was looking at some of this stuff when the announcement hit next week, and all I could think was, you know, Alexa is going to be everywhere. The Echo Auto, which is not the first device to bring Alexa to your car, that would actually you know, the Rove with the Vivo, Rove, which is a monoprice brand with the Vivo, did that first. Garmin did that first. The Echo Show is a strong sign that Amazon is aware of what's going on in terms of Google's home devices, you know, specifically a certain Mirage from Lenovo. I'm not going to talk about the sub, but I got to say the Echo Link and the Echo Link amplifier are particularly compelling to me because they look like to be decent quality devices that actually have a subwoofer out and the ability to do outputs possibly to fairly sophisticated audio gear. I'm very curious about those because I'm an audio nerd. You know, the Echo input bring a lot to your, to your own speaker. They're also competing with some of you know, I wonder if Belkin is making the Amazon smart plug or if that's something they just decided to do in-house. Not that it's hard to do a smart plug, but this is one of those moments where it's like, wow, look at all these partners on Amazon who are having their products emulated by stuff being built directly by Amazon. But there's also, there's a ton of speakers coming out. This thing fascinated me. I reviewed this on Tech Thing this week. This may look like a Netgear Orbi satellite, and it is, but it's also a Netgear Orbi satellite, and it's got Alexa built into it. You can just see the four pinpoints for the microphones.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yeah, and it's also a speaker that was engineered by Harman Kardon, and it's somewhat fatter than a standard Netgear Orbi satellite, but you know, offers all of the speed, has two Ethernet adapters instead of four, and it's got, you know, no USB thing on the back, which you can't really do anything with on the Orbis, but unless that update has gone through and I just missed it, which I'll check for after the show. But you know, this is another case where it's, you know, Alexa is showing up in some really interesting places. I thought this was kind of fascinating. It's not just an incredibly powerful tri-band satellite for your mesh home network. It's also Alexa and a speaker.
What if it were also a microwave, though?
You know, well, then it wouldn't be in my house because my
there is some irony in a microwave as part of a wireless network that microwaves usually totally screw up wireless networks, you know, 2.4 gigahertz and whatnot. So there's some interesting thought there. You know, I don't know. Yeah. Like at first I heard that they were making a microwave and I thought that was dumb. And then I thought, you know, I bet the vast majority of people that have microwaves don't know how to use like all the buttons settings and the features and the capabilities, you know, hey, defrost 3 pounds of chicken, right? Sounds like a really good idea. So I'd be curious to see what the uptick of it. It's a fairly low cost device. I think it's what, $69 or something like that. So it's a pretty entry level microwave as far as microwaves go. I don't know. It's been a long time since I bought a microwave.
I think microwaves are one of those things where there's lots of opportunity for margin.
Yeah. I'm intrigued. $59. Yeah. So a little bit cheaper than that.
Well, it was funny because some friends of mine, they do a lot of work with CNC mills and stuff like that. And there's kind of the CES for the CNC milling trade or the machine tools trade or whatever it is. I don't know the name. I apologize. Took place a couple weeks ago in Chicago. And they were laughing because there was this big voice controlled CNC mill. And it's like, it's going to be such a time saver. And the problem is like, you know, you would tell it to get this tool or execute this operation. And then it would basically be like, are you sure? Are you sure you want me to do that? And then you would have to, you know, confirm. And then it would start, you know, grabbing the tools and doing the thing. And they were like, it was great, except it took us twice as long as it would normally take us to just press a button. And I think about that a lot when I look at things. I think, you know, microwave for 30 seconds or heat popcorn is probably going to work on this one. I'm hoping it has a banning feature where if you burn popcorn, you will no longer be allowed to. As soon as it detects popcorn, it will automatically go into a shutdown mode and warn everyone in the office. That would be cool if you could send out like an SMS.
Or if you're reheating fish, something like that too. Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly where I was going. Like the fish warning.
That's pretty good.
You know, it's interesting and weird to see where a lot of this stuff is going. But
you could imagine this being a coffee maker. You know, you say, you know, Echo, have my coffee ready for me at 7:50 a.m. Right as you're walking upstairs, stuff like that. You know,
if we just figure out a way for the technology to remove the coffee grounds from the bin, from the mesh, whatever the filter.
It's the same. Yeah, it's really basically mean. Burrito bot is what you're asking for again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, also not burrito bot, but widely anticipated and desperately wanted by lots of people, I suppose. Oculus announced the standalone Oculus Quest, formerly known as Project Santa Cruz, in their keynote today. Shipping next spring, $399 with touch controllers, 50 plus games at launch. Essentially, this is a high-end standalone VR headset. And if you're thinking like, well, why isn't the Oculus Go high-end? Well, it's not the screens. This actually has 4 headset-mounted cameras inside of it to do positional tracking, which is a pretty big deal. So it won't just be head turns. It'll be head turns, hand gestures, overall body movement. And one of the demos I really would like to see is they were apparently playing Gunfire Games' Dead and Buried, which is a sort of arena Wild West shootout where you can get a bunch of people in a room using their virtual blasters at each other. And apparently it'll actually map, if you're in like a living room and there's a couch, it'll map the couch into the game. This isn't the first time we've seen something like this, but apparently it's much, much easier to set up based on what I've heard from people that were there. Built-in speaker rig similar to the Oculus Go, which I found incredibly effective. Same display as the Oculus Go, which is like 16 by 1440 per eye, I believe, or is that total? I should double check. I was so sure of that just a few hours ago. But I'm very curious because they're promising 50 plus games at launch. You know, they're promising an excellent experience for $400. You know, and a standalone experience, because my complaint about the Oculus Go is like, yeah, I can turn my head. Yay. Not having sort of like six degrees of freedom was a little maddening on the Oculus Go. But it's looking really interesting. It's looking to ship in spring 2019. No mentions of battery life.
Nope.
So
they They didn't mention during the keynote what processor it was on. They have since confirmed that it's the Qualcomm Snapdragon 835 processor, which actually brings up a couple of interesting points with it, right? So the Oculus Go, the one that's $199, or is it more than that? $299, $199? I think it's $199, right? Depending on the memory capacity you get, is powered by the Snapdragon 821. This is the 835. There are phones shipping today that use the 845.
Right.
And we would expect them to announce the next generation Snapdragon part by the end of this year, like in the December timeframe, because that's kind of their pattern that they've been on for a little while. Which, you know, the some of the statements made by the Oculus team on stage was that it would bring PC, like PC level VR experiences, right?
Right.
Which I'm a little concerned that they're maybe setting the bar too high. I think it's a six degrees of freedom device, which means, you know, you're untethered, so it's going to be a better experience in that way than it would be with a Rift or a Vive, because that's six DOF as well, meaning you can walk, move, turn, side, whatever. But you don't have you have a cable attached to you in those instances. But in terms of just like raw compute power, you know, the 835 is a very reasonable SoC. It's got a lot of graphics performance, but it's not up to a desktop PC. So It'll come down to a lot of what the developers, how they target this device, how they build their games and their applications and whatever experiences they are going to create for the Quest. But I think setting up and saying that this is going to be better than what you get on a Rift, it might be a disservice to them at the end of the day. I mean, screen resolution, image quality, you know, that could actually be better on the Quest. It is a much newer device. They may have better sensors for tracking, but just in terms of raw horsepower, the Quest is going to struggle to keep up with any of the, you know, minimum rated spec for Rift or Vive machines. But for $400, you know, you don't have to buy a PC, right? So there's obviously a trade-off. And I just wonder if they have overpromised to some degree than what they'll be able to deliver on. Although I am very excited to try this. Any VR Star Wars experience, I'm down for. So what is it? Vader's Quest? Vader's something? Right.
It's funny. I seem to be finding different quotes on the resolution of these on the different articles I look at. So
interesting.
Yeah, interesting is a gracious word for it. you know, the other thing that came out this week. Well, I guess technically the microwave came out last week, but NVIDIA announced the GeForce RTX 2070 availability. And it's gone from like being a mystery to October 17th and, you know, shop starting at $499, $599 for the Founders Edition. How are we feeling about 20 series GPUs this week? Because you were not feeling the love as much as I would have expected.
I mean, I'm mostly unchanged with this. I mean, the availability time frame doesn't really change much for me. The pricing is still what it is. Performance wise, we'll have to see where it falls in line, but I mean, it's a significant drop, maybe 60% of the speed of a 2080 Ti. And then you're falling off at least another 30%, even 40% maybe from a 2080. So This will be another instance where reviews and analysis will have to look at where it sits in the product stack of 10 series cards and where it stacks up. You know, in this case, it'll be more important than ever where it stacks up against Vega, right? Because I think now we're going to be squarely in Vega 64, Vega 56 performance territory. Although the pricing will be as such that we'll have to have the same debate that we had before. And hopefully, I think what we'll see is the 2070 will be closer, will be a better improvement over current existing products than the 2080 was. But until we actually see the numbers, it's hard to say. It's a $200, $200 delta between the 2080 and the 2070 FE and retail, like, you know, lowest minimum MSRP that they'll advertise. So we'll see. I don't know. I'm hopeful still, you know, and I think the 70 series cards, the 970, the 1070, and eventually the 1070 Ti were some of the most well-received products by the community in terms of they tend to be the best performance per dollar segment for a lot of gamers. So $699 or $599 and $499 are pretty high prices to fall into that same metric, but
yeah,
maybe.
I mean, looking right now at a 1080 for $470, 1070s at $380. I feel like I haven't done any intense analysis, but it seems like the prices are coming down. 1080 TIs are anywhere from like $650 to $789. There's a bunch of sales running on them, so it seems like inventory is being cleared.
And there's still, and from what it looks like, there's still a decent amount of availability. Like, you know, just looking up GTX 1070s on Newegg, you can find them, a fairly healthy collection of them still there. And that will be the thorn in NVIDIA's side for the foreseeable future until whenever these 10 series cards kind of flutter away into the wind, and hopefully are not replaced by a bunch of cards on eBay that are, you know, used cards. But I think we'll find that will be the case too.
I'm kind of really curious to see what happens with the, you know, there's going to be there's going to be a lot of cards. Are the miners waiting for the 10 series cards to run out, or are they still making money at this point?
I think one of the, if you want to look at it this way, so the mining performance on the Turing cards is going to be better, but I think the higher price is going to keep them away. And they probably won't touch any of the 20 series cards until the 10 series cards are gone. And even then, obviously, that's a significantly slower market than it once was. If you look at Bitcoin and all the associated alternate currency options, they've all been very stagnant for a while. And so I don't see a big push in that coming back. So I think if you're seeing people sell off, it means that they're kind of getting out of the mining market as a whole, which again, I'm totally going to be fine with. But if you look, if you look on eBay, like I'm looking right now, there are GTX 1070s used, likely having been mined with, you know, $250. $260, $270, yeah. $250. So there's going to be a lot of options there, and we'll see how long that segments last. A quick search of GTX 1070 on eBay results in 2,918 results. So,
wow.
Yeah. And some of those, like the sponsored ones, are still crazy nuts expensive. Like, how about $1,072 for a GTX 1070 ASUS card? Not a good deal. Don't buy that one, guys.
There seems to be some sort of marketing technique on eBay where people offer products for considerably more than they sell for MSRP, even when there's a tremendous amount of availability on that. Or maybe it's just some of the things I've been shopping for. But
yeah,
it's oh man, there's
just catch one every once in a while.
I got to say, the number of sub 215 millimeter GPUs is starting to drop. So I may have to buy one soon, or it may be a long time before I can finish that mini ITX build. So, oh my goodness. Shifting gears, MSI GeForce RTX 2080 Gaming X Trio review, a cooler and quieter tuning. Is this the first non-NVIDIA GPUs you guys have looked at in the 20 series?
Yep. We've got this one. We have an ASUS review coming up probably later today. This MSI card, the Gaming X Trio, is, you know, basically an aftermarket card with a giant aftermarket cooler on it. It performs very well. It is, you know, more expensive than the FE. Actually, let me go back to the bottom here and check and see where we're at. $849. So it's a $50 price premium over the Founders Edition of the RTX 2080. So this is not an option of, hey, let's go below the Founders Edition. This is better cooling, quieter cooling. I mean, look at those RGBs. Clearly, clearly an enthusiast level card. It's a big beast of a graphics card. Triple fan design, fairly aggressive, kind of, I don't know, gamer style cooling. I would say lots of sharp edges. 2 8-pin connectors on this, as opposed to an 8+6-pin connector. Mm-hmm. So you get, in theory, a little bit more headroom there. From a performance perspective, it is probably just a handful of percentage faster than the 2080 Founders Edition. Nothing significant out of the box, but it does give you a little bit more headroom for overclocking. Although one thing that we're finding now with these cards is they're all still kind of topping out at the same frequencies because of the way GPU boost is implemented, the way the voltage limits are implemented. And until people find ways around NVIDIA's voltage regulation, you're probably going to see peak performance, peak overclocking settings relatively close amongst competing products. Now, the difference is you'll get much lower temperatures, right? So I think this this MSI card in its manual top overclocked performance, I think it was 110 megahertz GPU offset, it kind of settled at sustained clock speeds of 2025 megahertz. It was running at like 71 degrees Celsius or something like that. So a good 10 degrees Celsius lower than the reference card, than the Founders Edition. So that's a positive to look at. But in terms of overclocking, you're actually about in the same realm as the Founders Edition. And we're still, you know, this is only the first card we'll see as we get more retail cards in and we start to see what other people are posting in their reviews of retail card reviews, if this is going to be the norm. I did see a post over on Gamers Nexus, which is a good review YouTube channel, that they they did a hacked mod to attach a water cooler to a GTX or an RTX 2080 or 2080 Ti, I don't remember which one. And their basic result was that the overclocking capability didn't really change from the stock cooler with the with the air cooler. It just meant you could run it quieter and cooler than you could with that design. So that's kind of where we're at. And it's not really that different than where we were with the 10 series, right? The aftermarket cards really sell on, if you're trying to lower that temperature, if you're trying to lower that sound level, NVIDIA has been taking away the ability for their partners to really differentiate through voltage changes and really, really, really pumping up the clocks. So,
you know, those changes you might do to differentiate your product from the other people that sell our product that you think is your product, well, we're going to eliminate those just like Intel did. And the consumers will thank us.
What?
This is not the next story in the lineup, but I just wanted to read it because it's so close to Microsoft's annual Surface Fest. Microsoft Surface laptops regain Consumer Reports recommendation. Our new reliability ratings prompt the change, but the Surface Go falls short on performance. And you heard it here a while ago. The Surface Go is tiny and portable and great for browsing the web if you're really patient. I mock with no love in my heart. But, you know, it's they got pulled out of the recommended status in Consumer Reports ratings because there were so many reported reliability quote, last year we removed that designation because of poor predicted reliability in comparison with laptops from other brands. The latest survey indicates that Microsoft's reliability is now on par with most other laptop brands, end quotes, which allows them to once again recommend the brand at Consumer Reports. And that's all part of, you know, Consumer Reports. They have a bunch of subscribers, and then they talk about owner satisfaction now in the score and the overall score along with the brand reliability. this doesn't indicate that some of the high-end ones aren't underperforming compared to other products with the same CPU inside of them. Although there have been some tweaks that have made that less, not as horrendous as it was for a while. But yeah, they're, quote, the Surface Go is the only Surface that isn't getting a recommendation. The company's other models, including the Surface Pro, Surface Laptop, and Surface Book 2, do score well enough to be recommended. So, and, I also thought it was interesting that Microsoft was like, please evaluate these as laptops, not as laptops and tablets, which is an interesting and subtle distinction. But, you know, it's also interesting that a product can be recommended but have kind of lackluster performance because of, the form factor. But it's interesting. It's an interesting kind of note. I also am always kind of fascinated because – Consumer Reports is one of the only places that has tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of subscribers that actually report on the reliability of their products. So, you know, and they pretty much nailed the, you know, the washing machine kind of thing. So I do not wish to dismiss their systems. They've also been around for a long pile and set the standard for a lot of this stuff.
It did.
Switching back to the rundown, DisplayMate declares the new iPhone I'm still calling it the XS Max, an A-plus display device. They were really impressed by automatic color management, excellent factory display calibration for Rec. 709 and DCI P3 color spaces, quote, virtually indistinguishable from perfect. My partner in crime in AV Excel, Robert Heron, big fan of the work they do over at DisplayMate. He was really impressed by just exactly how enthusiastic they were about this. And it's pretty impressive. I also want to give a shout out. I have several friends of mine who ordered these for kind of first possible delivery. And some of the photos my friends are taking are really spectacular. In terms of this is certainly bringing the low light performance or the sort of like, you know, like I'm in a horrible lighting situation right now because I am backlit, and normally I'm smart enough to not be in that situation, but we're in the middle of doing some work on the house, and I have a light in front of me. Now, if I had, for chance, an XS Max sitting here instead of using this light and this camera I have, we'd probably have a much more natural skin color for me, and there would be much more detail from the dark corners around me, which might not be positive from a aesthetic standpoint, but would be impressive from a technological standpoint. But the color gamut's really amazing. And I got to say, I'm really impressed by some of the photos I'm seeing coming out of this. Because if you want to take photos of pictures in low light situations or unfortunately lit situations, which so often happens when you have a small child that won't stand still, they're doing a really good job. XS Max component cost estimated at $443, which was a little higher than I would have thought for no particular reason. That's the 256 gigabyte version. Tech Insights did a teardown of the new device. Quote, nearly $50 more expensive than the estimated $395.44 component cost of the new 64 gigabyte iPhone X. Basically, as we've come to expect, they think the most expensive component in the device is the Max display, which is pricing out at something like $80.50. And then the A12 chip and modems are pricing out at, like, they're guesstimating $72. Followed by storage, which is still incredibly expensive for desktops and laptops, too, not just phones. So it's and it's also just overall a much more expensive device to manufacture than the iPhone X, which may be why it's the iPhone XS.
I still keep saying that, and I've talked to many people who are in the industry they call it XS, and I can't tell if it's on purpose or on accident still, but
it just feels so natural.
that BOM cost gives you a pretty good idea of what their margins are. It's kind of in line with what Apple has predominantly shown their margins to be when they do their earnings reports and stuff, so right. Yeah, makes sense.
Moving in a radically different direction from super over $1,000 phones. I actually will be testing out a 400 gigabyte micro SD card from SanDisk in this phone later on today. They were on sale on Amazon yesterday and for well under $100, like $89-$90. And I'm really curious because I feel that there is artificial differentiating being done on a lot of the Android manufacturers, because what appears to be the same sort of SDXC chipset, and I could be wrong, right? Because this Motorola Moto G6 phone I have, for example, it does not support 802.11ac. So perhaps the chipset that supports the SD card does not support more than 128 gigabytes. But we've run into a lot of cases where flagship phones are reporting that they support 2 terabyte SD cards, which don't exist, or micro SD cards. Their lower level phones, which are less expensive or entry level or modestly priced phones, claim support for only 128 gigabytes. And I'm trying to decide if that's to keep people from buying jank high capacity cards and creating tech support issues, or if that's because there's actually a physical limitation, or if they put a software kind of cap on something inside of there. So hopefully I will have an additional 400 gigabytes of capacity in this phone tomorrow. I wait with bated breath to see how that works out. And if it doesn't fit,
Have you determined what you're going to do with that?
Yeah, I actually was running like 80 or 90 gigabytes of music, probably 60 gigabytes of music. I tend to hoard the photos on my phone. I will say the Android backups to Google Drive has been fast. I upgraded my Google Drive, so I just have full resolution photos being backed up off my phone, which is pretty fantastic. And makes me less likely to keep 9,000 photos on my phone, number one. Number two, I store a lot of lossless music on Tidal. And I've also been testing something called Qobuz, which is a French lossless music manufacturer that's looking to move in the U.S. market with a very flaky Android application. But they also offer some pretty interesting stuff. But for me, I just store a ton of media on it. Netflix Online, I was using a bunch when I was traveling a few weeks ago.
And downloads.
Yeah. And it's amazing, you know, you get 300 or 400, FLAC songs and a couple seasons of something on Netflix, and all of a sudden, 128 gigabytes just seems tiny. So we'll see how that goes. Sure. Intel 14 nanometer availability issues continue. You found this up on Digitimes. I was kind of fascinated and slightly horrified by this. What's going on with Intel? Is it getting worse?
So I don't know if it's getting worse, but there's just more information coming out. This is apparently a quote from Compal, the president of Compal, which, if you don't know what that is, it's one of the largest ODMs that builds notebooks and PC systems that people rebrand and resell. So in terms of size and kind of influence in the market, they're fairly high up there. He noted that so far Intel has not yet given its downstream partners, which they would be one of them, a clear schedule on when the shortages can be resolved. I think we talked about a week ago or so that Intel, I don't know if we talked about it on this, but Intel, there were rumors going that Intel was moving chipset production to TSMC, or maybe they were going to migrate some chipsets they had moved to 14 nanometer back to a larger process node in order to free up space in the 14 nanometer production facility so they could get more processors out and modems out, or whatever it is that they're apparently falling behind on. And this is just kind of another data point for that. Acer apparently also noted that the shortages are not only affecting individual brands, but the notebook market as a whole. They said they originally expected notebook shipments to grow 5 to 10% sequentially in the third quarter, but they've cut that to 5% or less. So that's a pretty significant result if that ends up being the case. And Inventec, another one of the ODMs, expects third quarter shipments to rise by single-digit percentage sequentially and stay at the same level in the fourth quarter. So again, a little bit lower growth than people were expecting. And in this one, basically the Compal president said that this was unlikely to go away until the second half of 2019, which is, a full year away, right? So that would be a long time to have to deal with a lot of these shortages. but some other people are saying that it might be in the first quarter of 2019 that gets fixed. I honestly don't know the answer to this, how quickly and how fast Intel can maneuver its production facilities and all of that. And I don't know what their automation capabilities are for kind of moving that stuff along. It's not as simple as going into a piece of software and saying, you know what, actually, let's just move that over there and we're done. It's definitely more complex than that. Otherwise, they would have, you know, fixed this before it became a problem and a public-facing problem at that.
There you have it. Oh, my goodness. Somebody give a shout-out. You were saying this actually may give AMD, or I should say Digitimes was suggesting this may be another opportunity for AMD to get even closer to the 30% global desktop market share, at least in Q4 2018. I mean, do you think they will aggressively drop prices, or do you think they will just have availability and people will take advantage of that?
I think from AMD's perspective, you probably don't want to drop prices. You want to keep your margins high. You want to, a lot of times if you're dropping pricing, it's somehow admitting that your product is subpar and that you can't compete in the areas that matter in performance or efficiency or what have you. So they'd probably keep pricing the same. But there are some, again, this is a Digitimes story, so we got to take it for what it is. But there are some people claiming that they might hit that 30% global desktop CPU market share by the end of this year, which would be the first time they've done that in like 12 years, I guess, since kind of that peak of the Athlon days. And I, you know, there's also been stuff where HPE has put out some documents. This is their server division saying, look, we're having some shortages on Xeon processors, but here are the AMD EPYC based servers that we recommend to replace them, right? And that was a document that they apparently put out to a bunch of potential customers and everything, right? So if you're Intel, that scares the crap out of you. If you're AMD, you're super excited about it. And it just in favor of AMD, things just kind of keep happening to give them a boost, right? They built the right product. They have fantastic performance and efficiency. You have the Intel 10 nanometer issue, and then the 10 nanometer issue is pushing back on this 14 nanometer supply issue. So there's a bunch of things that kind of, you know, add up to this potentially being a substantial year for them and kind of going into 2019 with the same momentum. And yeah, that Digitimes story talks about, you know, maybe getting 5% of the global x86 server market share by the end of this year too, which would be a significant number as well. Plus, they've got Zen 2 coming. They've talked about that sampling in the first half of 2019. There are there's a lot of potential for gain in the short term for AMD, which is not something that we get to talk about a lot. We always talk about forward looking stuff and years ahead and in advance. But in this case, if you're AMD, hopefully you're stepping on the gas pedal and pushing all this stuff through and getting that marketing and sales and distribution channels all spinning up.
Good time to be AMD.
It is.
Also,
look at their stock price over the last year, and it's hard to argue that statement.
True that. Oh, my goodness. Hey, I want to give a shout out to... I'm looking at Odyssey's Mobius headphones, the headset with the headset tracking built into it. It's a planar magnetic headset that is designed or built to try to bring a new level of audio to the gaming community. I'll talk more about this in depth on next week's show because I'm still playing around with some of the settings in this. It works wired. It works wirelessly. They've got some interesting sound modes built into it. For example, footsteps, which is designed to emphasize a chunk of frequencies that are likely to make it easier for you to hear people sneaking up on you. I could use help on that. I'm sure a lot of people could, but it's an interesting product because Odyssey is a high-end headphone company. You know, previously, their least expensive on-ear headphones were like $599. They're looking to sell this for $400. They did a Kickstarter project with it. I'd be very curious to talk about this some more with you next week and get your opinion on some of this stuff. The other thing I want to do is give a shout out to a couple friends of mine. I think we mentioned Vokyl, VOKYL.io. And these are a couple of friends of mine who work for JDS Labs who make really nice, super high performing for the money headphone amplifiers and DACs. And a couple of the guys there, Nick and Jude, decided that they were tired of crappy sounding gaming headsets and decided also to do an Indiegogo. And it kind of blew up in the last couple of days. It's really impressive. They're using a magnesium aluminum driver, a traditional dynamic driver in there. I haven't had a chance to play with the microphone, but I got a chance to demo for extended period of time to demo the headset. And it was really impressive for music and for gaming. The drivers are coming. They found the drivers in Shenzhen, and then they're actually building them and doing all the machining for the ear cups out in St. Louis. Or more accurately, Southern Illinois, but they live in St. Louis. But I want to give a shout out to those guys and congrats them on hitting their their Indiegogo goal. So apparently they've been furiously calling suppliers and going like, oh my God, we have to start building stuff now. Those are selling for, I want to say, $275 now. They had a less expensive level earlier, but they feel really nice. They were trying to create something that's, something that would blend well with your everyday carry collection of titanium goodies, right? They feel good in the hand. They're extremely comfortable. They should be curious to see who's the first person to throw them and whether or not they can manage to damage the densely the aluminum, the heavily CNC milled aluminum construction. I doubt it, but it's first time for anything. But it's nice for me to see a lot of better audio experiences showing up on the gaming side of things, because there's a lot of crap with lots of LEDs on it. And some of the LED covered stuff is actually not bad. And a lot of the gaming headsets are designed with, like, we're going to do something that looks like it's on the, a character in a video game, but doesn't actually sound particularly good. So it's interesting to see some sort of high end approaches to gaming audio. And I'm pretty excited about that. So
yeah, that sounds cool.
VOKYL.io. And of course, Audacy is AUDEZE.com. And I'll be talking about the Mobius on next week's show. So got to hear it for a little bit at a Can Jam LA earlier this year. And I've gotten to spend a significant amount of time kind of playing with it, with watching surround sound content or 5.1, 7.1 surround sound content, gaming, and music, amongst other things. So more on that later. We got a couple weeks before the 2070 ship. I don't think there's anything coming from AMD for a while. Is there anything exciting you can tease us to, or is it just kind of like...
We still have some retail RTX cards to look at. I think we'll probably see, I think we'll see some stuff in the next couple of weeks. I think that's what I'll say. We'll see some new stuff in the next couple of weeks that I think will make it, we'll reinvigorate the enthusiast group from a different perspective than graphics.
You mean like so, GPUs with built into them,
just like that.
ALEXA,
yes. Yeah, just like
mice
that.
Mice with AL, the Google Home mouse. Okay, GOOGLE.
Move 3 pixels to the right. Yeah, exactly. Just that's exactly how I was thinking.
Are you sure you want me to move 3 pixels to the right? Bink, bink, bink.
Oh,
oh my goodness. We mock, except this is our lives. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Shrout.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.